All right, it's time for us to do our Kegel exercises. Why do we do them? Who cares? Well, the reason is that our pelvic floors are very important for our health. Our pelvic floors hold up the organs of the pelvis, including in women, the uterus, the vagina, the bladder, and the rectum. And so the stronger you can make your pelvic floor muscles, the better you can support them.
I like it. So then we have this patented GynoCast customized Kegel exercise.
World renowned.
Customized.
And acclaimed. Prized winning.
We sound super fancy when we talk about it like that.
That's right.
But you've come up with this great, great routine that we can use to help strengthen our pelvic floor.
So easy.
Right. So you ready to start it off?
I'm ready.
Okay. 3
times a day.
6
days a week.
9
seconds per Kegel exercise.
And 12
Kegel exercise in a row for a rep. And so you're just doing it 3 times a day. Do 12. Hold it for 9 seconds. Okay, you can do it 6 days a week and take a day off. You'll have a pelvic floor like a chain link fence, Twyla Dang.
You'll
be able to pull a trailer. You will be the envy of your neighborhood. You will walk taller.
I'm going to go do them right now. I'd like to walk taller today. So make sure that you're doing them, and feel free to go get that infographic off of the GynoCast Facebook page and share it with your friends as well. Stay tuned.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the GynoCast. My name is Dr. Eric Hegard. I'm a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist. I am here with Twyla Dang. I'm sorry,
I think
Twyla.
You just like saying my name more than I do.
I do, and I like to just kind of give that little uncomfortable pause so nobody really knows whether
what's
you're
going to
say. I love it. I don't know why. I don't know.
Okay.
It just brings a kid out of me.
It's all right. I'll let you have it.
Well, for those of you who are new to the GynoCast, thank you so much for joining us, and for return listeners, thank you as much, and a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of, I'm giving an air hug here to those who have come back.
Yeah, not a visual medium.
It's,
so.
I'm moving my arms around like I'm hugging a snowman.
He's moving his arms around. He's doing something.
And because, you know, when you come back, it's like you're greeting a new friend.
Aww.
An old friend.
Okay.
No, a new person listening is a new friend. An old friend, you know, one is silver, the other is gold, Twyla.
Wow.
Yeah, you like that?
That's a good reference. Now I'm going to have to put it in the notes.
Write that in the syllabus.
For the syllabus.
Really profound things that Hegard said.
Silver and gold. You know, that's a whole song.
I know it is.
I know. So
I don't remember how it goes, but I used to sing it.
Well, what version do you want me to put in the syllabus? You want me to put like the traditional like staid version, or you want me to do like the new
silver? Oh wait, how does it go?
There's like a nouveau gospel like Kirk Franklin version, which is beautiful.
Well, sing it.
I don't sing. That's not happening. I haven't had anything to drink, and this is not karaoke.
Make new friends and keep the old, Twyla. One is silver and the other is gold,
okay.
Right?
It is, exactly.
All right, I remember that. That comes from the deep, dark recesses of my mind.
Well, I'll put in the syllabus.
Well, for those of you who don't know what the GynoCast is what, Twyla Dang?
It is a podcast where we talk about anything and everything women's emotional and physical health and well-being.
That's right. We talk about stuff that people really need to know about and want to know about, but sometimes don't know where to go. And so the things that we talk about, things that maybe you don't want to talk to your mom about, or grandma, maybe, but some people are sometimes more comfortable talking to the grandma. You know, but you know what I'm getting at.
Absolutely.
The things that maybe you're milling about the chocolate bar at the office party, and you're sitting there with your graham cracker and you're dribbling it in the chocolate pouring out.
You are putting a lot of detail into this.
And you know, your boss is there, and you don't want to just say, "Boy, do you ever have this itching, burning feeling down there?"
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. But here on the GynoCast, you can say that.
Okay.
You can wonder that.
Yeah.
And so we talk about important things. Most of them are serious.
Yes.
Many are not.
Yes.
But oftentimes we try to find.
And sometimes we get off the rails.
And sometimes we get off the rails.
I'm sorry.
And so, anyway, you know, I don't know whether I want to get into this argument today, but Twyla and I were arguing about her.
What?
Veganism.
Oh, here you go.
And, I'm just going to throw this out because I think this is worthy of a conversation. It's just because you have a pulse and you're a mammal, I don't think that makes you any more worthy of value in terms of your life than something that doesn't necessarily have pulsatile flow of fluid, but has fluid dynamics. And I will tell you this, as a child, I remember I had a flower.
Yes, you did.
And that flower would turn its little flowery head,
sure,
its petaled face towards the sun. Flowers move.
Yes, they do.
And so, you know, I just don't understand the distinction. We have the same DNA. The same DNA with the four amino acids, GC, whatever.
Oh, whatever.
I used to know those.
So says the doctor.
God darn it, I was going to throw that out and really impress
I know,
everybody.
Weren't you?
But this is, you may know that Twyla and I have an ongoing conversation about this because I respect her veganism. I just don't understand.
Get it. So, I wish everybody could see my slightly not shocked, sarcastic face that I'm making right now.
She also looks bored out of her skull right now.
I just love when you poke the bear on that. Yes, I'm still going to eat vegetables, even if they turn out to be sentient beings. Sorry.
Yeah. And I bet you if you could, and somebody's done this. Actually, there was a scientist in India in the early 1900s that did actually measure, I don't remember the name. I'll get the name for you, though. Because I can see
Thank you,
because
it can go in the syllabus, too.
Yes, because there was a discussion between this scientist who was, I think his name was Bose, like Bose, like the speaker.
Oh,
but we will clarify that. We'll have a link on our website so you can get more information. But there's an interesting conversation between him and Paramahansa Yogananda, who is a famous Hindu teacher.
You're going to have to spell that out.
Paramahansa Yogananda was an amazing man who moved from India to the United States actually to bring understanding of kind of Eastern philosophies and merge them with Western philosophies. And he moved to the United States in the early 1900s and lived here for the rest of his life and actually created quite a following. But he was trying to merge kind of Eastern sensibilities and philosophy with more Western sort of scientific thought.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up actually spending some time with this, I believe it's Bose. I'm just going to throw it out there, even though it may be wrong.
We'll find out.
But this guy actually measured the energy impulses in plants and found that they respond to different sort of emotions. Like people talk to their plants. They think that makes a difference. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. My mother loves plants. I'm just not, like I said, I just like to eat them.
Yeah.
So
with a good vinaigrette. Are you going to give us a nice vinaigrette recipe on your...
No. Sorry.
Okay. Jeez.
Save that for the other podcast. Thank you very much.
Abrupt. Well, okay, so we...
Well, listen, we're 6 minutes in and nobody knows what we're talking about today. That's what I'm talking about.
You know, how does this happen?
You... I'm blaming you.
It is me.
Nah, it's both of us. If we don't go down together.
That's right. Well, sometimes, you know, we want to go in a certain direction, but the wonderful thing about the GynoCast and the humanness of it.
Yes.
I'm going to say that, the humanness of it, mm-hmm. is that Twyla has a pulse. I have a pulse.
Okay.
Our brains are just whipping right now.
Yep.
And we're like going 1,000 miles an hour and we're making connections and it's fabulous. You can feel the energy in the air.
That's great.
I like that too.
What are we talking about
today?
Okay,
so today we're going to talk about something that we talk about a fair amount kind of peripherally on the GynoCast.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about a lot of reasons that people have pain.
Yes.
But we are actually going to talk about pelvic pain today.
Okay.
And pelvic pain, just the kind of the general description of it, is, believe it or not, I'm going to throw this out. Yeah, I think most of us know what pain is,
yes.
And we've experienced that. If you hit yourself with a hammer, you know what pain is.
Mm-hmm.
Pain below the belly button. How do you like that?
Okay.
The pelvis is that region below the belly button, which you'd think that, you know, it's pretty obvious, and indeed it is, but that's really a description. And this is a, you know, most of us have, every one of us has experienced pain, but there's, you know, abrupt or short-lived pain, and then there's pain that impacts your life.
Yeah.
And it is not a rare thing. And in fact, it's estimated that about 15% of women of reproductive age, you know, so if you want to just say, let's say, you know, 12 to 50,
okay,
have pelvic pain that impacts their life. And about 25% of those women have actually pain to the extent that it keeps them from really engaging in their normal activities, like going to work, taking care of their family, etc.
Wow.
And so I do the math, and there's, you know, 350 million people in the United States. If you take 15%, that's what? That's 42, I'm just throwing it out.
I don't have my calculator, so.
I'm going to say 42 million women.
Wow.
Now, that can't be right, Twyla.
Too high? Too low?
Yeah, well, 350, half of that would be.
350 million, half of that?
Well, we're talking about over 40 million women.
Right.
You know, of reproductive age, take about, you know, 30% of that. So you're talking about 10, 20 million women.
are experiencing pain like that. And we know that you hear us talk about the endometriosis, for example, mm-hmm. On this show a lot, and that's been estimated to be 10%. And so I actually think that the estimation that I was reading of 15% of women experiencing pain that is impactful is actually low.
Okay.
Because, you know, endometriosis is just one particular cause of it.
Right.
And so, and this is a big deal. And so I think that one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it is that it is impactful. Number two is that many women, and I don't take care of men beyond kind of fertility stuff, but live kind of in isolation with their discomfort. And meaning that, you know, a lot of times they may have had pain for a long time, or maybe it's not enough that, you know, people really notice it all the time, but they experience it.
Right.
And,
but a lot of our life we spend managing pain in terms of, we don't feel like we have the ability to slow down and not,
right,
you know, and address it. I mean, we don't even take off sick days for things like cold and flu.
Exactly.
So chronic pain, especially if it becomes pain that's something that just seems to continually happen, you just kind of learn to live with it as opposed to right. trying to find a way to stop it.
That's right. And so, and also it's, you know, many of these things, especially if they have to do with the pelvis,
yeah,
are not things that at least historically have been things that people were terribly comfortable talking about.
Yeah, that's true.
And so many women have grown up perhaps with some sort of pain, didn't know who to talk to about it, perhaps thought it was just normal, and it can be very isolating for people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think is one of the wonderful things about the internet as and social media is that it has allowed people who have different sort of disorders to be able to find each other and create a supportive community.
Right.
So that's wonderful. So, but we're going to talk about pain. Now, we just basically discussed what it is, how many women have it. And this is just in the United States. If you talk about worldwide, just apply those, you know, different percentages to,
yeah,
you know, six.
The number only grows.
Mm-hmm. And so we kind of define pelvic pain in two broad categories. One is chronic pain, which is pain that has existed for over 6 months.
Okay.
And then the more acute pain disorders that are less than
is
6 months.
6 months is the standard bear for chronic? Because that seems low.
You mean like not enough time?
Yeah. Well, by definition of length of time that it's occurring. Yeah.
I don't know exactly how they came up with the 6 months, but that is...
Well, probably based on the fact that, on the idea that people with common sense would go get it checked out after 6 months, but most of us just don't.
Right. And also most... you know, different conditions or diseases that would cause acute pain are going to resolve themselves within a few months.
Okay.
And so, that, you know, bears contrast to something that is going to be more chronic in nature.
Okay.
So I'm sure it was just an arbitrary decision on, you know, for those people who were making those definitions in the past, but it works, and that's how we think about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so one of the things we need to kind of divide up is, you know, is this something that's been going on for a long time, or is this something that is fairly new? Because we approach it in some ways similarly, but the decision tree is somewhat different. And so what I thought I would talk about is sort of discuss actually how I would evaluate somebody who came into my clinic complaining of pain.
Okay.
Because whether it's acute pain or chronic pain, in some ways is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you know, as with everything else, there's the history, what we call the history, which is where you just sit and talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
There's the physical exam. There's different laboratory evaluation or imaging studies.
Right.
And then once you have a basic diagnosis, then you start to talk about how you treat it.
Okay.
And so I'd like to kind of take it, perhaps a hypothetical patient, and go through that process.
Sure.
And then we can talk about the different options. And as we discuss this, I'd like to have people kind of bear in mind, this is where kind of basic anatomy comes into play. For those who are somewhat, you know, I've talked about lumpers and splitters.
Yes.
You know, I'm a lumper. I like to have categories. You know, so I look at things and I try to say, is it fit into this, 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 and this, and then go into smaller detail. And there are other people who just are always, you know, looking for the trees in the forest.
Right.
So so a patient, and I see a lot of patients, obviously, with pelvic pain. And so they come in, and the first thing that I think is something that is still of value in clinical medicine is simply looking at somebody without touching them and just sitting and talking to somebody. Because you can actually get a pretty good idea of what's going on just by simply talking to somebody.
Right. Well, remember, I told you I have a sort of a philosophy of this. Almost no adult in their everyday life, unless you're famous or infamous or something, ever get asked in detail about themselves. So yeah. People always take the opportunity to talk about themselves if you actually give them the opportunity. If you ask them the open-ended, how are you feeling? How are you doing?
Right.
They will tell you because no one asks that question to them, right. Hardly ever.
Exactly. And, you know, this is one of the things that I think is part of our medical system today, which is a little bit of a tragedy, which is oftentimes, and I feel very fortunate that I'm not in this situation. You know, if you have 10 minutes to see somebody, if you're in a situation where you are booked every 10 or 15 minutes all day long, you know, you are not sitting down and really talking to somebody and thinking about somebody.
No, you're just moving. You're moving files
right.
At that point.
And you're just it seems almost impossible. And I can't imagine how people kind of live in that sort of situation. But I mentioned this thing about kind of categories, which is, let me ask you, Twyla, what is in the pelvis? Just think about it. What's there?
I don't know. Everything that's important to me.
Right. Well, the basic things, your bowels,
right?
Your bladder.
Mm-hmm.
In women, you have the uterus, the fallopian tubes, the ovaries, the vagina. You know, those are the basic things. Then you have muscles, you have joints, you have nerves. And so, and basically, as you know, after having, you know, 8 years of medical training and being in practice for 20 years, it really comes down to kind of, I'm thinking about this as I'm talking to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give somebody enough time and the freedom to describe what they're experiencing, they will oftentimes light it up for you.
Right.
And so, again, as we're talking about these different options or different conditions, they're going to fall into these different categories. Is it bowel? Is it bladder? Is it related to the uterus, ovaries, fallopian tubes, vagina, the skin outside.
Right. And we should let everybody know that whenever we're talking about stuff like this, sort of in that context, we make sure if you go to the website, there is a diagram. Like, we make sure to have, you're really big on anatomy and understanding parts. And so we have diagrams that really detail these things out for people.
Yeah.
So that if you need if you actually want a visual reference while we're having this discussion, you can go to the website and get it.
That's right. And I also, Twyla and I both feel about this, is the importance of knowing your own body, knowing mm-hmm. your anatomy, and being able to describe it anatomically with proper terminology.
Because, yeah, that's important.
Because the vagina is not everything from the belly button down.
Right.
And people use, you know, like, what was it? Vajazzling.
Yeah.
You know, that it is a fun term. I love it. I think it was Gwyneth Paltrow who was talking about vajazzling, but
yeah.
she's not jazzing up her vagina.
Right. Exactly.
You know, she's jazzing up her labia or her vulva, the skin on the outside, the
exactly.
tissue out
that
there.
Has,
so.
Which has nothing to do with the skin on the inside. It's not the same.
Exactly. The vagina is the tube from the cervix, or assuming you have a cervix and uterus still there.
Yes.
To the outside. It's the fibromuscular tube. So, don't embarrass yourself at a party by saying something anatomically wrong.
You're not going to embarrass yourself at a party, because most people don't know it either. But it's nice as adults, and this is one of the main things I've learned from doing this show with you, that as an adult, it is good to know what your body parts are, not just what they do, but what they actually are. Because if you are having a problem, if you do go into your doctor, it's nice to be able to have the vocabulary to sort of shorthand a conversation, especially if you're in pain, especially.
That's right.
It's nice to know that because some of us have children and we want to be able to teach our children proper terminology, or if something's happening with our kids and we want to be, you know, they need the tools to be able to tell us where their pain is as well, because that's something that's going to be need to be communicated to, you know, a physician or someone in an emergency situation or something. So I have found myself to, sort of profoundly moved by the idea that I didn't know enough about my body before I started this show, and I've taken a keen interest in wanting to know since I've done this show. And I hope that's one of those things that people kind of latch onto
exactly.
as they listen, is that, you know, we can all be smarter about this, and it's to our benefit to be smarter about this.
That's right. And and I also think it goes along with what we've been talking about for years now, Twyla, which is the importance of self-advocating.
Absolutely.
And if you don't have the ability to know your body, I would argue in some ways that it I'm not sure what I'm going to...
It hinders your ability...
It takes power away from you.
Yes, it does, because what you do, and we've talked about this, what you do is you go into a situation with a doctor, someone that's highly trained, someone with all this background, and you wind up in your head deferring to them.
That's
right. And not just because they happen to be the doctor in the room, but because in your head you think they must be smarter than me. If you know your own body parts, if you know the terminology, if you are able to articulate what's going on with you... When you're in that room and someone is telling you that's not what it is, it helps It helps light up your own radar. It's because sometimes that happens where you don't know how to describe what's happening to you.
That's right.
They don't know how to suss it out. And so between the two of you, you come to some sort of conclusion of, well, wait, or I don't think that's what it is. And really, it could be something serious. You have to, part of knowing how to advocate for yourself is knowing what's going on with your body in terms of how to communicate that to someone else.
And that's exactly right. And I think that, you know, the best healthcare is when providers and patients are working and thinking together on things.
Absolutely.
And certain things are obvious. And if you walk in and you've got a metal spike sticking through your shoulder, we don't really need to talk about your family history probably.
True.
You know, or if you have a bone protruding through your thigh.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you don't really probably need a lot of patient doctor team, thinking about that.
Exactly.
But in some of the more complex things, it really is helpful. And I'm saying this as a clinician that if you have a good relationship with a patient, if a comfortable relationship where there is, some equality and where patients feel empowered and the physician also feels comfortable in allowing the patient to be empowered, then you really can problem solve together. And because I've had things, I've had this numerous times with my patients where I'm suggesting something and hopefully, and this has been my experience, especially if they've seen me for a while, they're comfortable enough to say, you know, I don't think that's right.
Right.
I don't think you're catching what I'm getting at. Whereas if you're intimidated, you know,
you're just going to go, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've all done that. Every single one of us as a patient has sat in a room with a doctor or a dentist or someone who has more training than us.
Yeah.
And known in our head, known in our gut, this is what it is,
and right.
This is what it feels like. And then they go, oh, no, you're probably just, oh, no, that's probably not. Oh, no, that's not common to this.
That's right.
How do you get somebody to hear you when you're not confident in what you know?
That's right.
Knowing this terminology, developing that, you know, that sense of self is what you need to be able to be confident in those situations. It's not about a confrontation. It's really just about saying, hey, I don't think that's what it is. I mean, I've always made a really strong point, even before I knew terminology well, to be able to describe my pain in detail.
Yeah.
Which is something that I know people think is a little odd. But if you go in and you can tell somebody, it was a very sharp pain. It felt like this. It was right here. It's gone on for this long. It lasted this long. They can help you get to an answer. That medical professional can help you get to an answer a lot quicker than if you come in and go, my side's hurting.
Yeah, exactly.
Support for the GynoCast is provided by OBGYN West. OBGYN West provides the highest quality care from compassionate providers, including women's health issues, from general sexual health to pregnancy care, childbirth, menopause, and beyond. Whether it's your teen's first annual exam, a new baby's on the way, or you're facing the special challenges of middle age, OBGYN West provides a wide array of services. Their doctors and PAs are trained in virtually every type of OBGYN service and procedure. OBGYN West provides exceptional care for women.
So if you have pain in your frenulum, for example, I want you to come up to me and say, Dr. Hegard, my frenulum is hurting.
Okay.
And then you know what I'm going to say?
It's no such thing.
I'm going to say, oh my God, what the hell is a frenulum? And then I'm going to, and then I'm going to go, hey, I just got an abrupt call here. I better step up for a second.
Okay.
I'm going to go to my phone and I'm going to look up frenulum.
Okay.
And,
wait, you're going to laugh at this, but my mom used to be like that. My mom used to be convinced that half the stuff that the doctors would tell her was made up. So she would go to doctor's visits and then she would come back and call me and have me ask my husband, because my husband's a PA. Yeah. And she'd be like, you ask him if this is a real, I wrote it down. I made them spell it. Can you make sure this is a real thing? And we were like, yeah, it's a real thing. And she would really think you're using, my mom used like the phrase $15 words. She's like, you're using too many $15 words. I don't think they're all real. So we would check.
You know, the thing is, that, you know, I'm saying this thing about the frenulum, and I was thinking is I brought it up because I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I know it's something.
You know it's something.
I know it's something that I used to know. And so I knew it had something to do with the face, which is why I brought it up.
Okay.
And so the frenulum is a small, it's actually the thing that kind of holds the, it's the skin between the tongue and the lower jaw. Lip.
Oh, really?
You know, that little thing.
Yeah, underneath.
There.
Yeah.
And so, but.
Huh.
I'm sorry. God, just,
that's already something I learned new today.
Yeah. Or if your uvula is hurting.
Yeah.
You know, so most of us know what the uvula is, but if you've got a kind of a dark mind, you might think, that sounds like something in the genitalia.
Yeah. When you didn't know.
Like a uvulitis. It sounds like something that would have, you know, itching, burning, and maybe
contagious.
No,
it's just really sore.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about back on track, Twyla.
Yeah. Well, God, that's not my fault, Mr. Frenulum.
Hurt a cat.
Just saying.
So, you know, somebody comes in, they have pelvic pain. I sit down with them and you talk to them.
Okay.
And you can use me
as the hypothetical patient. It's fine.
Well, and you look at them, you know, because, you know, believe it or not, people who are sick look sick.
Yeah.
And by sick, I mean, like, you know, if somebody looks like, if they're dying, they look like they're dying.
Right.
And believe, you know, that sounds like kind of an obvious thing, but, you know, there have been times when somebody comes to the office and they've got something, they're complaining of this or that. And I've looked at them and said, this is not something that we're going to deal with in the clinic today.
Right.
You're going to go to the emergency room. This is going to get evaluated because this is not a minor thing.
Right.
And so, as you were saying, actually, I ask them, well, tell me what brings you in. Tell me about your pain. And you actually mentioned something that would be very helpful for people is to do something called a pain diary, which is to actually, you know, keep track of the pain that you have for at least a few days if you can.
Yeah.
And when does it happen? Is it associated with anything? Like if you eat something, does it hurt after you eat?
Yeah.
You know, what makes it better? What makes it worse? Where is it located? Does it radiate somewhere? Does it go up your back, down your leg, to your, you know, something else? Describe the pain as you're describing. Is it sharp? Is it stabbing? Is it dull? Is it burning?
Mm-hmm.
These things are really helpful. And so, you know, oftentimes, simply from talking to somebody, before you even lay hands on them or do any other studies, you can have an idea what's going on. Like I saw somebody last week who was a complicated pain patient with a history of a lot of endometriosis and a lot of surgery. But in talking to her, she was describing pain that was in her right upper quadrant, up under her ribs,
okay,
on the right side, and that it was happening mostly after she ate, and you know, she would feel an extremely uncomfortable sensation where that was kind of above her belly button to the right side, and she could not get comfortable when this happened, and it would last a few hours and get better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, without even laying hands on her, I could tell this is probably your gallbladder. You probably have gallstones, and the gallbladder releases, it contracts and releases bile, and bile salts, especially after something that's fatty.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's kind of a classic description. Or somebody I saw actually yesterday who was describing that she was having this pain that was sort of on her right side, going a little bit to her back and then radiating down to her groin. That's a kidney stone. You can almost guarantee it. It's a classic description.
Mm-hmm.
The appendicitis where somebody has this right lower quadrant pain that's concentrated pretty much there, and then over time it will radiate towards the belly button. These are things that if the more descriptions that you can give us, the better we can figure it out.
Absolutely.
And again, how long has it been going on? Did anything happen around it? You know, did you get in a car accident? Did you change your job? Did you change partners? Did you get a, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, these are all any different medications. All these things can be very helpful because oftentimes, again, we have a pretty good idea of what's going on before we actually have to do an examination. So again, as we were talking about before, you know, what's in the, you know, basically what's in the pelvis, you have the basic things are the bladder, the bowels, the genital organs, and each of these has somewhat different characteristics of pain that may be related to them. And for example, things that have to do with the bowels tend to have bowel-related symptoms.
Right.
You know, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, blood. you know, from your rectum, for mm-hmm. example, changes in appetite. You know, people who have, you know, for example, an appendicitis or a bowel injury of some sort tend to lose their appetite. You know, for someone like me, you know, I could eat in the middle of a hurricane.
Uh-huh.
I've actually done that, and that's a story for another time.
Indeed.
You know, and so changes in how they are, you know, their normal sort of constitutional patterns, you know, whether, for example, if they notice a change in the stool, you know, are they, are they normally constipated? Now they're having diarrhea, you know, are they straining? And that sort of thing could indicate a bowel-related issue. And this can be acute, as we were saying, you know, an appendicitis, for example, would be more of an acute condition.
Right.
A diverticulitis, which is an inflammation of one of the outpouchings of the large bowel. Diverticulosis is the same condition, just different degrees. Irritable bowel syndrome. People with that tend to have pain, constipation, diarrhea, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Inflammatory bowel disease, which is, an inflammatory condition of the bowel, which causes horrible pain in some people and bleeding and weight loss and just and real discomfort. And again, you can get those people with bowel related symptoms or bowel related conditions complain of bowel related symptoms. And so bladder, this is another thing we're looking at. You know, there's a number of different conditions that can affect the bladder and the kidneys and the ureters, which connect to them, and the urethra that comes out. And again, by talking to people, you can get an idea of that. And I was talking before about kidney stones. That has a pretty classic symptomatology, which is flank pain. Flank is kind of the lateral, the outside of your abdomen in the middle,
mm-hmm.
That radiates down to the groin. You know, if that happens and it comes and goes and it's pulsatile in nature, boom.
Right.
You know, there's a good chance that fevers and chills and back pain in that same area can imply a kidney infection. And then when you get down to the bladder itself, pain with urination, urgency, frequency, those things are suggestive of something that has to do with the bladder.
Exactly. Now, what happens if you said stage one is to talk to the patient.
Yeah.
What happens when you get past stage one? You've talked to the patient, you've kind of got an idea that something's going on. What happens next?
Well, generally we do an examination at that point, and usually we... you know, at that point have an idea of where we're going to in terms of where we're going to focus more. But the examination for pain, especially pelvic pain, is a little different than just doing an examination for something that doesn't have to do with pain.
Okay, so different how?
Well, you know, when we're, for example, and I think this specifically goes to women, I'm just talking from my perspective as a women's practitioner, but you would examine somebody with pain, pelvic pain, differently than someone who is, for example, having bleeding. Because, you know, the general exam that we do for what we call a bimanual exam, which is an exam where we're putting generally two fingers in the vagina and one hand on top of the abdomen, kind of trying to trap the uterus between our fingers.
Yeah.
It was a way of sort of we can gauge the size of the uterus and also whether there is, you know, the ovaries are enlarged and that sort of thing. A pain exam is different. And so, you know, obviously generally we're, you know, with the main exam, we're kind of looking all over the place, but we're focusing mostly on the abdomen and the pelvis at this point. And you want to gently examine the abdomen, have the patient point to where it may be more painful. You know, I'll ask them, is there one particular area that is hurting you more than others? And oftentimes it'll be sort of diffuse, like, well, it just kind of hurts down here, or one side or the other, or low.
Right.
But every once in a while, they'll say, it hurts right here. And they'll take their finger and they'll just go boom.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can get a sense that that may be an abdominal wall related source of pain. People can get nerve entrapment, especially after trauma or surgery,
okay.
for example, where a nerve, one of the abdominal wall nerves, can get trapped there and they can get a trigger point. And in that situation, I've had situations where I just say, well, would you be okay if I just go ahead and inject some numbing medication
okay.
in that area? And I'll go grab some lidocaine and go ahead and just numb that area. And sometimes it'll be like pain's gone.
Okay.
And so you have to kind of know what you're looking for. And then you examine the, just examine with your hands to feel for masses, any other tenderness. You're listening to the bowels, make sure everything feels okay.
Right.
And then we'll, oftentimes we'll move down to the pelvic exam. And with somebody with pain, again, I am not going to use both my hands. I'm not going to do a traditional, I'm not going to put a speculum in first.
Yeah, yeah.
Because speculums can cause pain. I'm not going to put my hand on their abdomen and in their vagina at the same time, because sometimes that can elicit pain from the abdomen, and you won't be able to tell whether you're just irritating the abdomen versus irritating the, or you know, eliciting pain from the uterus or the cervix. So, you know, basically I will start with one finger at the very opening to the vagina. I will gently press down and ask them if they feel any pain at the very opening of the vagina. I'm looking to see if there's any tenderness of the vaginal opening, mm-hmm. which can be a condition called vulvar vestibulitis. And then I gently kind of push my finger in deeper into the vagina, asking for them to tell me if there's pain, how much it is. Is it moderate, mild, or severe? I'll push on the different ligaments to support the uterus, push on the pelvic sidewall muscles, what we call the levator ani, which are the muscles of the pelvic bowl. And I'll do all that with one finger before I even start to really push on the uterus. And these are things that if you kind of don't know what you're doing, you'll kind of go in ham-handed and start, you know, kind of pushing everything around.
Right.
And you don't know. And then you'll go to the actual bimanual exam, where at that point I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to put a hand on your belly. This is going to be more uncomfortable. I need to put two fingers in your vagina. And then I will try to actually do what I was describing before, which is to actually kind of trap the uterus between my fingers to get a sense of its size and whether moving it hurts, and the ovaries and that sort of thing.
Okay, so you get to that point, and you've had the discussion, you've done the exam. You've sort of hopefully found sort of a trigger point here. Where do you proceed from there?
Well, then usually, again, simply from talking and do the exam, usually you're kind of narrowing down what you think is going on mm-hmm. at that point. And, you know, just in addition to the other parts of the pelvic exam, I'm looking for sensation in terms of the outside of the vulva, see if there's pain that's actually on the skin of the vulva, on the legs, whether there's normal reflexes, because that can indicate a nerve-related issue.
Okay.
And then oftentimes we'll move to some sort of imaging, like an ultrasound, which is very good at looking at the uterus, the fallopian tubes of the ovaries, a urinalysis to see if there's blood or white cells in the urine. And sometimes laboratory testing and that sort of thing. And usually by that time, by the time you've gotten to that, you have an idea of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And if it has to do with the bowel, you know, oftentimes then we're going to send somebody off to, you know, a gastroenterologist or colorectal surgeon for more evaluation of that.
Mm-hmm.
If it has to do with the bladder or the kidneys or the urethra, ureters, oftentimes we'll send those women off to a urologist. Not all the time. Like interstitial cystitis is a bladder pain syndrome, which we're going to talk about on a different show.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something that can be treated by certain urologists, gynecologists treat it. And it just kind of depends on somebody who's got a passion for treating pain. But usually we'll be sending people off to urologists. If it has to do with bones and joints and ligaments, that may be orthopedists or neurologists. And so that's kind of where we end up going. Oftentimes the things that are kind of centered in the area of gynecology end up being things like endometriosis, which
right.
we have talked about on the show quite a bit.
Right, and we'll continue to talk about.
Things that have to do with the uterus, which may be fibroids, which are benign, smooth muscle tumors of the uterus. Anything that may be infectious, like an inflammation of the ovaries or the fallopian tubes. And again, those will be the testing parameters that we'll be looking at, looking for sexually transmitted infections and that sort of thing, which can cause pain as well.
Absolutely.
And then, how do we treat it? Well, it depends on what it is. And we've taught the treatment for interstitial cystitis or bladder pain related symptoms is a topic for another show. Endometriosis, oftentimes, again, we can treat that with sometimes medical treatments, oftentimes surgical, again, a different show. We talked about the gastroenterologist, neurology, orthopedics, physical therapy. this is something that, especially when you come, when you start talking about people who have chronic pain syndromes,
right?
Which is, you know, a little bit of a different, it's not just a little bit, it's a very much a different animal than oftentimes acute pain syndromes.
Right, because when you say acute, that's something that can be resolved.
Usually. So, you know, if you're talking about appendicitis, boom, you know, that needs to be removed. If you're talking about an infection in the pelvis, like pelvic inflammatory disease, or, you know, a sexually transmitted infection like chlamydia or gonorrhea that mm-hmm. is infecting the uterus and the cervix. Again, those can be treated with antibiotics and will resolve. And again, certain gastrointestinal conditions, again, can be treated with antibiotics or different treatments and will resolve. But the chronic pain is almost always a team approach. And so with my pain patients, you know, the kind of the discussion I have is once we figure out what we think it is, and it may be more than one thing, a lot of these things travel together. For example, endometriosis and interstitial cystitis, they call them the evil twins. Oftentimes people will have both.
Okay.
Vulvar pain, vulvar vestibulitis. Again, oftentimes these things will all happen in the same patient. And so oftentimes you're working with people. I may have this person seeing a gastroenterologist or colorectal surgeon. I'm having them see pelvic floor physical therapy. I'm working with the pain clinic, et cetera. So it's a team approach.
Exactly.
So again, we're covering a lot of ground on this show, but I kind of the main things I want to get back to is, as we're going to close down here, is for patients to be advocates for themselves.
Very important.
A pain diary. Pay attention.
Now, we should talk about the pain diary because we kind of hit on that, the idea of keeping one. I think that's an excellent idea, but don't overthink it. A pain diary is simple as taking out your notes app on your phone and just kind of recording. If you want to, record it in your calendar. I know when I run into things, not always here. Sometimes I have some dental issues that need to be addressed, but I always make a point to log in my calendar what it is. You know, I'll put it in as an appointment and then I can go back and look and say, okay, it was this day at this time. It was this day at this time. And then you have a record. And when the doctor asks or the nurse asks, you can say, oh, you know what? I actually wrote it down. Here you go. And then you have it. It doesn't have to be, you know, a bunch of medical terminology. You don't have to pull out Google. Just describe how you're feeling in the moment that you're feeling it.
That's right. And you know, what time of day is it happening? Is it associated with your period? So in this diary or calendar, find out, you know, mark when you have your period. Sometimes you can make these associations. Does it have anything to do with what you eat or what you drink? Is it associated with intercourse? Is it associated with urination or bowel movements? Yeah, does it happen at night? You know, different times of day can be very helpful.
Yeah.
And so, again, keep track of this stuff because it can be very helpful. Number two, see somebody who cares about pain. Number three, you know, again, think about things in your own mind sort of in a system approach, because, again, that can help your practitioner begin to narrow this down with you, which is there bowel-related stuff? Is there bladder-related stuff? Is there stuff that has to do with your uterus, fallopian tubes, and ovaries? Mm-hmm. You know, and by that, I mean, is it associated with intercourse, your periods?
We should point ovulation out, there's in situations like this, there really isn't such a thing as TMI, is there?
No, absolutely. You know, and the thing is that, you know, these are oftentimes kind of uncomfortable conversations for patients, but it's not uncomfortable for us.
No, you've seen everything. You've heard everything.
You would not. Oh, my goodness. You would not believe the things that we hear. You just realize that one of the privileges of being a clinician is you get to see all the fascinating, wonderful, complex aspects of the human animal.
Right. So and so that shouldn't intimidate you as a patient. You should just know you can comfortably talk about anything you need to talk about.
That's right.
Because you're going to understand what it is, or you're going to have seen it or heard about it or come across it before. So there's no reason to be embarrassed. Share the information because the information can help get to making you feel better.
Exactly. More information is always better. If you feel like your questions aren't, advocate for yourself is something we talk about all the time. You feel like you're not being treated respectfully. If you're being shamed, if you are not being, you know, if you're not getting the information you need, and you know,
do
find
I get
somebody
to make,
else?
Do I get to make the fire the doctor speech?
Yeah, do
I love
it. Fire the doctor.
It's my favorite thing.
Go ahead.
Listen, you have to remember at the end of the day that you are the customer, in the doctor or health professional is a service that you've solicited. So if you are not getting what you need, if you are not being treated respectfully, if you are not, if you are feeling shamed or embarrassed or laughed at or humiliated by your doctor, guess what you can do? You can fire them, and you don't even have to be nice about it. You can leave. You can decide you don't want to see them again. You can go line up a new doctor. You can call your insurance company and ask for a recommendation or ask a friend or family member for a recommendation. You do not need to stick with a doctor that makes you feel embarrassed or uncomfortable or bad for any of your life choices or any of the pain that you're going through. That is not their job. And a good doctor would never do that. A doctor that's misguided or hasn't had enough training or is just flat out not a good doctor might do that. And if you feel like that for even a second, don't stay. And I am saying this from experience. I just recently fired a doctor and went and got a new doctor. And I'm so much happier from that perspective because I found a doctor who listens to me when I have issues. I was having issues with a doctor who was just kind of blithely, you know, listening, but not really paying attention. And years ago, I fired one of my baby doctors because I just did not feel like I got the treatment that I should have gotten as a young mom who needed support. Yeah. You don't ever have to put up with it. And trust me, I understand about, you know, premiums. I understand about, you know, what's covered by insurance costs. Like if you see a doctor, you have to wait a year to see another doctor. That's fine. You can still work within those constraints and find a new, better doctor. It's possible. Make sure if you have questions, start with your insurance company, ask there first, and then move on from there and kind of make decisions. But do not stay with a doctor that makes you feel uncomfortable about yourself for even a second.
Absolutely. So if you have questions or concerns, issues or comments, you can go to our Facebook group. Twyla, why don't you tell them how to do that?
It is easy to get to. Go to Facebook, type in the GynoCast in the search bar. If you aren't already a member, and you should be, you should join us. You have to ask to join the group. It's super easy. Just click on the button that says you'd like to join. We vet you, and then we put you through. It's a private group, specifically because we talk about difficult, challenging things. We talk about personal things. We talk about things that, as we said at the top of the show, that sometimes people are uncomfortable talking about in public spaces. We make sure that we have given people a space to have these discussions in a respectful, private, supportive place.
That's right.
Right. Sometimes you see the name, you know, the phrase gyno attached to something and people just get a little silly. So we try to keep that element out of the page, and we do a really good job of doing that.
That's right. I will take a short time to look at the profile of people that are joining.
Generally. Yeah, we all do. And if we happen, and sometimes like we'll make sure if you vet it and we've brought you in, if anything comes up that red flags after you've joined the group, there are
gone.
Yeah, there's a
kaboom.
Yeah, there's a couple of administrators and we make sure we clean that out. So
it's Old Testament justice. Boom, you're out of there. Old Testament cast out justice. Of the tribe. Right?
We just make sure they're not there anymore.
That's right.
But you can also pose show topics. You can ask questions. You can ask questions to the group. You can ask for advice. You can ask for recommendations. We also have a send message option if you want to send something more anonymously to us and ask a question of the GynoCast in particular. And I should tell you, if you ask a question, Dr. E is great. He gets on there. He makes sure to address your questions. He doesn't just wait till we have enough to do a show about them or something like that. Yeah. He addresses everything right away. And I've always found the way that you handle that group to be very admirable because you really respect people in that space. You really make sure to try to help people get to answers and information that will help them. And you're super supportive of the group that's there. I've never had more respectful conversations around difficult topics as I have on that site.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you for listening. Please tune in again.
Yeah, thanks.
See you soon.